get the tape going. Oh, that was even worse.
I would like to call to order this hearing of the Tax Reform Division of the Senate Committee on Taxes. Thursday, March 21st. The date? It was the 22nd.
No, today it's the 21st.
The 21st, 2013, at 9:10 a.m. We have the approval of the minutes from March 20th. Members would look over the amendment, the minutes. Are there any corrections to be made? Seeing none, Senator Dietzick moves approval of the minutes of the division for Wednesday, March 20th, 2013. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes are adopted. We have three bills today from Senator Anderson. Senator Anderson, welcome to the division. We're taking up today to start with these bills dealing with the way in which we can honor our military. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Bruce Anderson here with Senate File Number 213. This bill would broaden the eligibility criteria for the tax credit for past military service by including any veteran who has been determined by the military to be eligible for compensation from a pension or other retirement pay from the federal government for service in the military as computed under certain specific sections of Title 10 U.S. Code. And presently, the current law provides an income tax credit for certain former military members in recognition of their past career military service. And this credit is structured in a manner designed to offset part or all of a qualifying veteran's tax liability in any given tax year. This credit equals $750, but is reduced by 10% of any adjusted gross income from all sources, including military retirement pay, in excess of $37,500. And from the Department of Revenue, it says here that the general fund will be impacted negligibly over the next 2014, 2015, 2016, and 2017. And Madam Chair, members of the committee, I have with me today two gentlemen who would like to testify on behalf of Senate File 213.
Okay, thank you, Senator Anderson. And you can let either, whichever testifier wants to begin. Go ahead.
Good morning, Chairman. My name is Ralph Donay. I'm the chairman of the United Veterans Legislative Council of Minnesota. We bring together 34 veterans organizations in the state to work on issues that affect the military, both active, reserve, the Guard, and retirees. My reason for being here today is to give you a little bit of background on retired veterans that come back to the state of Minnesota and the problems facing us to get more of them to come. We tend not to try and call them retired, because when you come back to the state, you cannot live on your pension. You have to find another job. Finding another job isn't a great difficulty because of the education that we receive while we're in the military. The military has some of the finest schools in the world when it comes to technical and administrative leadership. We have all those things. So when a career person comes back to the state, they bring that with them. This little handout that I brought with was just to give you an idea of where Minnesota falls in the realm of things in the United States. The side that lists all of the states down the column, that shows Minnesota being 33rd in the nation for the amount of retirees that have come back to the state. We have approximately 0.89% of all the military in the United States that have retired. That's how many have come back to Minnesota. That should be about a 2% figure, but due to some of the things that I'm going to mention here, you'll see why these people don't want to come back to Minnesota. The Military Officers Association went through and listed 11 categories of what retirees or second career people look for when they go look for a state to go and live in after they've served in the military. You serve all over the world, all over the United States, so you've seen more than just Minnesota. Of the 11 categories that the Military Officers Association listed, Minnesota only had 2 yeses and 1 limited. So we had 8 out of 11 red dots on the chart that showed that Minnesota really wasn't where they wanted to come. One of the reasons is the taxation on their pensions. If you want a worker to come back and work for you, wouldn't you want to know what he or she brings to your company? To start out with, if they're not quite qualified with what you want them to be, we have money to go back to school to get that extra education, if it was even needed, to perform in the job that you're looking to fill. Currently, another item, and it's on the to the right of the data there, we are currently bringing in $323,052,000 into the state's economy. Wisconsin is way ahead of us when you deal with that figure or that amount of dollars. As of right now, today, 52.3% of those folks are over age 65. The younger military folks are not coming back to Minnesota. That's an average salary or an average pension of $19,144. That's the average. Yes, you have some generals and admirals that receive much more than that, but you have a lot of enlisted folks that receive a lot less than that. The other thing that I would like to point out is that when we come back to the state, we bring our own medical. We're not going to load down any of the state's resources for medical. Our families are now, under the current GI bills, allowed to use our educational benefits. So our wives and daughters and sons can go to college in Minnesota, and the federal government pays for it. So we're not going to tax the state in that manner. If you flip this over onto the back side of that sheet, there's a comparison there between Minnesota, and we like to compare ourselves to Wisconsin because we're both outdoor hunting and fishing states. If you look at the top of it, it shows what Minnesota has done since 2001. We have only increased that percentage by 0.07% in 11 years of the amount of veterans that have come back to Minnesota. If you go down just below that, you'll see the gap between Minnesota and Wisconsin. And down there at 2011, Wisconsin currently brings in $3.55 million more per month into their state's economy from retirees' checks. That adds up to over $42.6 million a year. So it's obvious to see that not having military folks come back to Minnesota is affecting our overall dollar budget line. And I thank you, and I'll take any questions at this time, sir.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifier, can you give me the number again of Minnesota military folks, that the total percentage versus the ones that come back? I think you said it was a lower number coming back that were from Minnesota. I think that's what I heard you say. But
well, in 2001, we had 0.82% of all the retirees coming back to Minnesota. In 2011, we've only increased that 0.07%. So we have 0.89% of the people getting out of the military that are coming back to Minnesota.
So, Mr. Chair, testifier, do you know how many of those were originally from Minnesota? I've got one of the bills was to exempt military pensions that I'm promoting as well. And we tried to get some data on this, and it looked like we'd break even if about 500 more people came to Minnesota. So I think it's a win for the state. It's a win to have retired military folks come back here. But it'd be nice to know how many people started off in Minnesota and really want to come back, but because of our tax laws and other lack of benefits for military folks, they decide to go somewhere else. So I don't know if you know that number at all, but it'd be great to find out.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I don't have that data of how many of them were originally from Minnesota, but that lovely lady sitting back there in the pink jacket is the reason why I am back in Minnesota, even though I grew up here. There are many more states that have their arms wide open for us folks to come back and live in their states, but that's why I'm here.
Thank you.
Any further questions, committee? All right, thank you.
I had one other item, Mr. Chair, I forgot to lay out. The other thing is the reserves and the guard folks that are here in the state cannot draw their pensions until they are over age 60. So if you look at that sheet, there's a number there that shows how many are here totally, but then when you look at how many are being paid by the Department of Defense, it's a lower number. That's the reason for that lower number, is they can't draw their money until they're age 60.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Donna. Mr. Kaiser?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, it was interesting today on the way down from my home. this has been something that our chairman, I'm Jerry Kaiser, I'm the vice chairman of the United Veterans Legislative Council, and they were speaking about the $4 million trout museum that they're asking for in the state of Minnesota, and the would cost that much. And I'm just thinking that veterans coming back to this state, the negligible numbers that are as a financial risk would be a better opportunity for us to increase our tax base and everything else that are happening in the state of Minnesota. And I just think it would be a feather in our cap to increase that number of veterans coming back, and the money that it, and any money, if in fact it would cost the state on the first end of it, or even on the backside, would be certainly worth it.
Okay, questions, committee, for Mr. Kaiser? Senator Anderson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. The bill before you is Senate File 213, and if I could get someone to move that bill, that would be great. I'm not sure where we're asking it to go to.
Senator Anderson, we're just going to lay it over for possible
inclusion. Okay, that's great.
I think we're going to do that with all of your
all three
bills.
Of the bills? Yeah. Okay, very good. Appreciate
and
that.
And so if you're finished with, are you finished with Senate File?
Yes, yes, sir.
Okay, let's take up Senate File 195 then. Lay over this. To make it official, Senate File 213 is laid over.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee. Mr. Chair, Senate File number 195 is before the committee. This bill would change the manner in which former career service members and fully disabled service-connected veterans would calculate their Minnesota income tax credit for past military service. Technically, the bill would slow the rate at which the credit is subject to an income-based reduction from 10% to 5% of the person's adjusted gross income in excess of $30,000. The effect would be that more eligible individuals would receive the credit or would receive a bigger portion of the credit. Under current law, Minnesota provides an income tax credit for past military service in the form of a non-refundable tax credit to any qualified military member who has either served at least 20 years in the military or has been rated by the U.S. or Veterans Administration as having 100% total or permanent service-connected disability and has separated from military service before the end of a taxable year. The credit equals $750. But may not exceed the amount of the person's income tax liability for the given taxable year. However, the credit is reduced by 10% of the person's adjusted gross income in excess of $30,000. This, under current law, the credit for past military service is effectively zeroed out for any former service member whose adjusted income from all sources, including military retirement pay is $37,500 or more. According to the Department of Revenue, in looking at their comments, back to the current law allows, the bill would change the income phase out to 5% of the amount of the gross income of $30,000, and thus credit is eliminated entirely for those with incomes over $45,000. So it would be a benefit to military members, retired members coming back to the state of Minnesota.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Anderson. Either your testifiers care to comment on this bill?
Just Mr. Chair, just that if a person drawing a pension, remember the average is only $19,000, plus if they drew Social Security, which would probably be around $14,000, that's below that threshold. So we're looking at giving those folks a chance to make a little difference in their life.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Dona. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's about 23,100 Minnesotans who receive military pension income from DOD, and it's assumed that all of all these who've served over 20 years or more qualify for this credit. And of those, about 6,100 did not have positive Minnesota taxable income and so would not make use of this credit. But by putting this into place, it would then qualify them. So it's a positive thing for, again, military veterans and those who are receiving a pension right now here in the state of Minnesota, and hopefully would be a plus for bringing people back. I have a daughter who is right now serving in the U.S. Air Force in Afghanistan, and she has told me that, as Mr. Donay has already mentioned, that because of climate here, financial climate in Minnesota, she is going back to Washington State, where her retirement income will not be effective as major as it is right now. So this might be a plus to keep, maybe bring her back home.
Okay, any questions for the Senator Anderson or the testifiers? Senator Anderson, it looks like the revenue estimate looks like about, what, $2.2 million, $2.3 million the second year?
Mr. Chair, I take it that with the $2.2 million and the $2.3 million, that with the parentheses around it, and I could be wrong, that that's in a negative way rather than a positive. I mean, it's not going to have a substantial effect on the overall fund, if I'm correct, and maybe somebody can correct me.
Ms. Paula?
Mr. Chair and members, Senator Anderson, the revenue estimate indicates that it would have a cost of $2.2 million in fiscal 14 and $2.3 million in fiscal 15 and so on.
Okay.
Yeah, the here in the tax committee, some of these things are backwards from what they'd seem otherwise, but the you know, overall that isn't a lot of cost, but I just wanted to make that understood.
Okay.
Anything further, committee members, or final comments, Senator Anderson?
No, Madam, Mr. Chair, I'm still thinking of Senator Respin in the chair. I just hope that this would be something that the tax committee and others, as we look at the budget, can include this in the final omnibus tax bill.
Okay, with that, one Senate File 195 is laid over. And Senator Anderson, Senate File 31.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 31 is brought. The bill would amend Minnesota's income tax law by providing a subtraction from taxable income of military retirement pay, including survivor benefits plan payments. Under current tax law, such pay is taxable. Under the bill, a retired military member or surviving spouse would be able to subtract a portion and eventually all of his or her military retirement pay or survivor's benefit plan pay from the amount of the person's federal taxable income, which is the starting amount for calculating Minnesota's income tax liability. The benefit would begin for tax year 2013 with the beginning year subtraction set at 20% of the military retirement pay. It would then increase an additional 20% in the succeeding years until reaching 100% of military retirement pay in tax year 2017, and thereafter for a five-year phase-in of the benefit. The subtraction would also be applied to the calculation for alternative minimum tax and thereby further benefit Minnesotans who are retired military members. And I emphasize retired military members. So the amount of people that are going to be affected by this is small, but it will be an incentive to attract retirement individuals and their spouses and people coming back to the state of Minnesota. And looking at the Department of Revenues, they're saying that in 2014 there is a cost to the state of $4.8 million, and in 2015, a cost of $9.9 million. And the bill would allow then that this would go into effect and affect about 17,000 taxpayers who presently receive taxable military pension. But as Mr. Donay has indicated, the amount of retirement people that are coming back and being a part of our society after being in the service and serving our country is very minimal compared to the rest of the population. So I appreciate the consideration of the committee and look forward to comments or questions and comments from our testifiers.
Okay, Mr. Donay.
Mr. Chair, I would like to point out I'm kind of on the same page as Senator Anderson in that my son-in-law and daughter are living in Hawaii, and he retired from the Marine Corps, and he's not coming back to Minnesota, even though they own some property here because it's the tax on his pension and such. Even though the cost of living is high over there, they weighed things and they decided to stay there. The other thing that I would like to point out is you can thank the federal government for me bringing a lot of money to St. Cloud State. I graduated cum laude in 2000 from St. Cloud State with the monies that was given to me by the federal government to complete my education after coming out of the military. So I am a product of what we were trying to tell you is a good thing for the state, is that we bring education, monies, everything to help the state. Thank you, sir. I'll take any questions.
Any questions from Mr. Donay, Senator Anderson? Mr. Kaiser, any comments?
Mr. Chairman, madams of the people of the committee, I'm in the same situation. My son-in-law is a Marine fighter pilot, and I have a new grandson, pretty excited about that. And they're back in the United States from a tour in Japan, and they're going to another assignment. He intends to stay in the Marine Corps, but you know, he has as a military person, you can claim any state that you want. Well, he claimed Florida because they have, and he just did his income taxes. There's no taxes there, so that's why they have that state. As a military person, they can do that. They can pick any state that they'd like because they're always moving. And his intention was that, well, he would love to come back to Minnesota. He's a highly trained individual, same kind of Ralph's son, and so I'm encouraging him to do that. I've told him that we were going to change the law for him, that he'd be able to come back. So I'm hoping that I can tell him the truth on that. So I appreciate the consideration. And again, this is a jobs bill. This is just not a give back to these people, because these individuals are coming back, as Ralph said, highly trained, motivated. They start businesses. They are encouraged to hire veterans themselves if they do start a business. It's a win-win-win situation for the state of Minnesota. Thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Donay.
Mr. Chair, Jerry reminded me of an old, by the way, when you get ready to leave the military, you're required to go into a program called the Transition Assistance Program. And one of the first things they do in that program is they put these big slides up on the screen and say, here's the best state to live in. And then they go down the file and it shows where the worst state is to live in. And unfortunately, Minnesota is down there by the bottom. And I, having been in the Marine Corps for 30 years, moved all over the United States, and one of the first questions my admin section would ask me was, oh, you're from Minnesota. Do you want to switch? And we didn't. We paid our taxes to Minnesota the entire time I was in the Marine Corps. But many of the military people that are in the service, they changed their residency to another state. My son-in-law did that. He never claimed Minnesota because it was cheaper for him to be in another state. And I just want to point that out. That is something that goes on all over the armed forces, sir. Thank you.
Questions, comments from committee members? Final comments, Senator Anderson?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just appreciate the opportunity to share with the committee our concerns for veterans and the ability to bring them back to our state and hopefully not continue to detour or defer them to another state, as my two testifiers have said. And knowing I have a daughter that is in that same situation, Anything to bring her back would be great, and I appreciate your consideration of these bills as we lay them over. So thank you for the opportunity to make the presentation.
All right. Thank you, Senator Anderson. And also thank you for all your work you've done for veterans over the years. I know what I've seen some of the work you've done over the years, so thank you for that. And also, Mr. Donay, thank you, and Mr. Kaiser also. You two have also been pretty dedicated to these to the servicemen and women of our country and state, so thank you for that. Senate File 31 is laid over.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee.
Just an announcement. Senator Ingebrigtsen was originally scheduled to be with us to present Senate File 310, but he's ill today. Those materials are in your or in members' packets, so that's why they're there. But we're going to now move to Senator Senjum, Senate File 397. Welcome to the division, Senator Senjum. Pleased to talk about the historic structure rehabilitation tax credit sunset extension. Good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. This is, as you've mentioned, about the extending sunset on the historic structure rehabilitation tax credit. Something that's been around for a few years. We had it in a bill last year, which was part of a vetoed bill, and so we bring it back this year for your consideration in terms of extending that sunset. Basically, the current law, this credit will expire at the end of 2015. The bill proposes to take it on to 2022 and extend the reporting requirements to 2026. It has been a rather successful program, as I recall last year. I don't have the numbers with me for this year, but perhaps my witnesses do. But I remember last year, and I'm not going to throw out a number, but it was surprisingly successful in terms of the activity that had generated and the interest in it. So, Madam Chair, I want to just turn over some time to my witnesses, and I'm not sure which ones want to start, but Mr. Kelleher wants to start.
Welcome to the division. If you would identify yourself, please, for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm David Kelleher from the Minnesota Historical Society. Thanks for an opportunity to present this bill along with Senator Dietzick's bill, which is very similar in scope related to the Historic Preservation Tax Credit. I think the question that Senator Senjum posed and that you all are wondering is, has this worked? Has it had some benefits? When this passed in 2010, you asked us, the Minnesota Historical Society, to do an economic impact study each year to gauge the effects of the historic tax credit. We've now done that twice. There's a copy of the second study that's just been issued in your folders. And the results have been very strong. And what that study that was done by the University of Minnesota Extension Center for Community Vitality has shown the number of jobs created just in the second year of this program is 1,480 just construction jobs. This analysis looked at the direct impacts, the direct indirect impacts, and the induced impacts. And the overall benefit from this is $8 per $1 invested by the state. So it's been very successful. There have been a few dozen projects that have happened across the state, creating construction jobs, architectural jobs, and several other areas of impact. That's the high point, Madam Chair, of the impacts of the sunset extension, and I think Doug Gassick would like to add a few words, and we'll have a couple of more witnesses to add their thoughts as well. I think maybe when Senator Dietzick's bill is up.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself for the record.
My name's Doug Gassick, and I'm the Executive Director of the Preservation Alliance of Minnesota. The Preservation Alliance of Minnesota is a statewide nonprofit dedicated to encouraging the preservation and adaptive reuse of historic buildings throughout the state. I'm also here as a representative of the Building Jobs Coalition. We worked alongside many of you in 2010 when the state historic tax credit was first passed into law as part of the jobs creation bill. Preservation creates more construction jobs than new construction because it's inherently more labor intensive. It's focused on labor rather than the materials, and that's demonstrated in the economic study that's in your folders. And as Dave mentioned, it created over 3,110 jobs during the 2 years that this credit has been in place. In brief, this bill extends the sunset put forth in the original bill for six more years to 2021. So that's going to allow more job-creating construction projects to begin the planning process right now. It gives private investors the certainty that they need for the construction pipeline to continue so they can continue all these great projects that are in the works. At the time when the construction industry in Minnesota is still struggling with high unemployment, this program is one of the top sources of jobs in the construction industry since its inception. And we're also really excited to see that this program is continuing to grow throughout the state. Right now we have projects in Willmar, Fergus Falls, New Ulm, so it's gaining momentum throughout Minnesota. So we urge you to extend this program to 2021 so these projects can continue in the pipeline and give additional time to this program so it can continue to generate these really important jobs and stimulate private investment in underutilized properties throughout the state. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Are there questions or comments for Senator Senjum or the witnesses? Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Senjum, I maybe missed it. You may have already said it, but why are we extending it out 7 years? Is there a particular reason that you may have said it and I missed it, but.
Senator Senjum?
I think perhaps Mr. Gassick pointed out, and I'll let him speak as well, but I think this just provides some level of assurance that they're not going to get into a program and it leaves. It's a cushion, so to speak, I think, in terms of just moving this forward. And it's been a good program, and it's a growing program. And, while it certainly costs some money, on the other hand, I think we've seen the ripple effect here. It's been pretty substantial across Minnesota, and it will get more. But Mr. Gastic, if you want to a little bit about that as well in your own words.
Yeah. Definitely when it comes to real estate projects, they need a little bit of time to coalesce and bring them together. So a lot of developers, my understanding is that they need the surety to plan the projects now and know that the tax credit is going to be there in the future so they can have them in place and get their buildings and the businesses in them placed in service so they can receive that credit. So the time is really right now to move the credit forward so we can have the surety to get those projects to continue.
Any other questions? Well, thank you, Senator Senjum, and for providing us with all the background materials for the program, too. It is very impressive.
Madam Chair, members, thank you very much.
Having said that, we will lay over Senate File 397. And now take up Senator Dietzick's approach to the same set of issues, and maybe you two gentlemen can just sit tight there. Senator Dietzick, your bill, 1175, deals with the same subject area. You want to explain how it is different or its major features. Thank you.
I will actually let Mr. Kelleher get into some of that. It just, in short, it just makes a few other tweaks to extends the sunset date like Senator Senjum's does, but it also adds a few little tweaks that I will let Mr. Kelleher explain.
Okay. Mr. Kelleher, again, if you would identify yourself for the record, tell us how Senator Dietzick's bill either adds to or is different from the version from Senator Senjum. Mr. Kelleher.
Madam Chair, David Kelleher from the Minnesota Historical Society. One way to think of this bill, Senator Dietzick's bill, is there are four things going on. One is the sunset extension that Senator Senjum just walked through. The second thing is that there are a series of technical changes that were brought forward by the practitioners in the field and others working in this area that conform federal language or conform the statute to federal language and a couple of process improvements for the review process. The third item is a fee change. When you passed the bill in 2010, you allowed the Minnesota Historical Society's State Historic Preservation Office to charge an application fee to applicants, and we have found that the cost of running the program to the Minnesota Historical Society are more than we anticipated. So we'd like to have a discussion with you about adjusting that fee so that the program pays for itself rather than taking general fund dollars that were appropriated for other purposes to the Historical Society, whether that's historic sites or whatever. The bill as introduced has a blank amount, so we would like to discuss that a little bit more. One option is to have a percentage. Many other states, our neighboring states of Iowa and Missouri, have a percentage of the either qualified rehabilitation cost or the credit to determine the fee. And then finally, the Section 6 is a clarification of the effective date. When the bill passed, there were some projects in the pipeline because there's an existing federal credit, and you all, in writing the language, tried to do the best to make sure that projects that were in the pipeline that were already underway didn't essentially get a windfall. So this takes care of one project that was in the pipeline that's in the gray area that we had some disagreement on that issue. So in summary, that's the differences between the two bills.
And Senator Dietzick, council informs us that the our Senator Skoy's original federal conformity bill that did more than just the federal conformity had these catch-up provisions,
yes,
and these clarifying provisions, and they certainly will be going forward as we then consider the policy question of extending the sunset. So those are safe and will be included, but we will be looking at the policy issue of good programs that cost a lot of money. But that's true for a number of things. So we appreciate you and Senator Senjum bringing these bills forward and the testifiers, Mr. Kelleher. So.
And I believe we have two additional
testifiers. Do you want any
further?
Do anyone want to say anything further about the bills?
Yep.
We have two more people.
Okay. Welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself, please, for the record. Either one of you may begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Welcome. My name is Shane Lefebvre. I'm a developer with Dominium. Dominium is a developer, owner, manager of affordable housing based in Plymouth, Minnesota. We are nationwide, but Minnesota is our biggest state in terms of number of units and projects that we have. Dominium has been involved with three projects that have utilized the state historic credits, being the Schmidt Brewery project, which is here in St. Paul, the Pillsbury A Mill project, which is in Minneapolis, and the Buzza project, which is in the uptown area of Minneapolis. All three of these projects, as I mentioned, not only utilize the state historic credit, but would not have been possible without the state historic credits. That credit makes up for, and the equity generated from that credit accounts for just under 20% of the total sources of funding for each of those projects. And Dominium has been working on, particularly Schmidt and Pillsbury, working on those projects for, excuse me, about 6 years prior to actually being able to make them a reality. And what allowed them to become a reality was the induction of the state historic credits. You know, as I said, we took a run at these, and not just us, but other developers, tried to make these work, tried to make them happen, but never could quite get there, couldn't make the deal work from a financial perspective until the state historic credit became available. The other thing about these projects and these type of buildings is these are landmarks. These are historic buildings. The A-Mill is I mean, everyone in Minneapolis knows that building, knows what it is. It's very recognizable, and no one wants to see that go away. And to convert something like that to affordable housing or to preserve it for the long term takes, it takes some financial means. It takes a lot of doing. And the state historic credit, when combined with the federal credit and potentially with a federal low-income tax credit, makes those projects doable. The modernization and conversion of historic buildings to preserve them and convert them to an ongoing and another use takes a lot of doing, and that state historic credit makes it possible and keeps those landmarks as a part of the community and ensures that they're continuing to be in service and utilized buildings going into the future. And another benefit of these projects and of the state historic credit is the number of jobs that are created. As I mentioned, doing historic conversion work is takes a lot of doing, and if you said that $125,000 in construction costs equates to one job, then we would have approximately 1,400 jobs created between just these three projects. These three projects lead to 647 units of affordable housing, and we believe that's beneficial. And there are a number of other projects that are on our radar that we're looking at for the future that would definitely utilize the state historic credit if it was available. And if it was not available, then the financial feasibility for those projects would definitely take a hit, and we're not sure that they would work. So we believe we've utilized this credit. We think it is a very good thing for affordable housing, for job creation, for the preservation of landmarks, around the state of Minnesota. So we would love to see it extended so we can utilize it in the future. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions or comments for the witness? Thank you very much. Sir, if you'd like to identify yourself for the tape, we welcome you to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is David Ibarra. I am the president of the Minnesota Pipe Trades Association. Here this morning on behalf of the State Building Trades Council at the request of Harry Melander. Harry is fortunate to be testifying before Congress this morning out in Washington, so I am here in his stead. I'll begin by thanking you all for your leadership and your support and passage of the 2010 jobs bill. As you're all well aware, I'm sure that construction industry was in full-blown crisis mode in 2009-2010. Unemployment was at levels not seen since the Great Depression. I'm happy to be able to say that things have improved significantly for some, more moderately for others, but things have gotten better, but they're still not where we'd like to see them. Some are still experiencing some unemployment levels at extremely high levels. A lot of these folks that are still out of work have been out of work for a long time, having exhausted their unemployment benefits. So, we'd like to see opportunities to get these people back to work and contributing to the tax base through income tax, as well as spending their money in sales tax generation. This initiative, the Historic Preservation Tax Credit, has put thousands of people to work, as we've heard already this morning. I will say that our members take pride in doing this work and preserving the work that has been done by their predecessors. I've been asked to keep my testimony short and sweet, and I'm certainly willing to do that. So I will thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee for your consideration. I will respectfully ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions or comments for the witnesses? Gentlemen, I hope you will sign in on the witness sheet there. Senator Dietzig, and then I have a question for Mr. Kelleher. Senator Dietzig, anything further you'd like to add at this point?
Yep, Madam Chair, I'll just reiterate what Senator Senjum said. And then in your packet, this economic impact statement, it does talk about $536 million in construction activity, including 3,000 jobs, and $165 million in payments to labor. So this is a good project. And it's not just jobs, but that is a big part of it, but it's also preserving what is unique and special in our community. So I thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Senator Dietzig and Senator Senjum. Mr. Kelleher, you talked about the fees, and in Senate File 1175, In Section 2, there's a blank on line 2.5, and I wondered if you had a suggestion of what to put in there for the committee to consider at this point moving forward?
Madam Chair, two options for filling in the blank would be to put in one half of 1%, 0.5, so it would read 0.5% based on estimated qualified rehabilitation expenditures, or changing that amount to a dollar amount, and the dollar amount could be up to $45,000 or so. And I see you're having a little bit of sticker shock. We did a little bit of research on the comparable thing is building inspections, and when someone is doing a building construction project, they have to pay building inspection fees, which are comparable to this. It takes our staff a great deal of time to review these projects. Some of the projects are in the tens of millions of dollars of the total project cost. And on one of the projects alone, our staff spent over 500 hours of staff time doing a review of the project. So when you have a big project like the Pillsbury A Mill or the Schmidt Brewery, there's a lot of detail to make sure that the developer is meeting the historic preservation standards. There's a lot of detail and work involved with that. So that would be our suggestion, to put a dollar amount up to $45,000 or a percentage up to a half a percent of the qualified rehabilitation expenditures.
And Mr. Kelleher, would that be this section would be something that you would want us to pay attention to, even if we were not able to extend the sunset beyond a certain period of time? I mean, that's something that really does need to be dealt with. Senator Dietzick, did you have position on the what should go in the blank?
I didn't. I'm leaving that up to Mr. Kelleher's expertise, but I was going to point out, as he was talking about the Pillsbury A Mill, which is a building, I believe, over 100 years old, and I do have a picture that will be in my office at some point after break, and if you stand on the corner and look at it, you can see, because this was an active Pillsbury Mill, and it concaves out, and so in a 100-year-old building where the structure itself is going like this, it's not straight, it just shows some of the intricacies involved in rehabbing a 100-year-old structure. And I'd rather have them do that than tear it down, because that is our history. It's where our city in Minneapolis started. So thank you.
How would members feel about taking that second suggestion and go ahead and putting it in that blank in and then laying the bill over so that it would be the office may collect a fee for application of up to $45,000 based on the expenditures? Senator Dietzick or Ms. Pollack?
Madam Chair.
Advice.
Madam Chair, if I could clarify with Mr. Kelleher, did you suggest having the 0.5% based on estimated qualified research expenditures up to $45,000? Otherwise, there might be some concern if you just left it up to $45,000 that there would be no gauge for which to tie the application fee.
Madam Chair, Ms. Pollack, you could do it either way. There are three options. You could do a percentage, you could do a dollar amount, and you could sort of do a hybrid and say that it's a percentage that goes up to a certain dollar amount. I think it's helpful to the State Historic Preservation Office to give them a little bit of flexibility so that they can encourage small projects to go forward in greater Minnesota and make sure the program works.
Okay, I'm going to ask Ms. Pollack. I really would like to take care of this here so that we have something going forward rather than waiting until the omnibus bill and maybe overlooking this. So, Ms. Pollack, a suggestion for tiers but also flexibility.
Madam Chair, if Mr. Kelleher would have some general suggestions as to how an application fee up to, say, the current $500,000 for projects
Up to the current $5,000.
$5,000 based on estimated qualified research expenditures up to a certain amount, so that there would be a more structured way of creating the credit.
Madam Chair, so a way to do that would be on line 2.5, after the deletion of $5,000, also delete the dollar sign, dot, 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 and insert up to 0.5% up to $45,000.
That's fine.
Ms. Pollack, does that work? Senator Dietzick?
Madam Chair, yes.
Senator Dietzick, would you like to move that amendment?
I move that amendment. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Does everyone understand the amendment? discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the Dietzick amendment as read by Mr. Kelleher and as explained by Ms. Pollack, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Is there further discussion on Senate File 1175? Seeing none, we will lay over Senate File 1175 as amended.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Members, that concludes the Tax Division, Reform Division, and the committee meetings prior to our spring break. So we will probably, we're coming back on that Tuesday, and we probably will not have, we'll start with session that day, and, you know, look forward to having meetings that week, Wednesday and Thursday. So we will not be having a meeting on that on Tuesday prior to session. Okay? Thank you very much. There being no further business before the committee, we stand adjourned.